Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to talk about tomorrow's election with a panel of eight experts on Florida politics. And as we listen back to Florida this week, which is the program we're about to hear, please email us in the studio with your comments. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. It's a pretty lively conversation. It gets testy at moments, too. So stick around. We're going to hear Florida this week right now on 88.5 FM. Coming up next, now that the final day of voting is almost here, with the presidency, congressional, and legislative races hanging in the balance, along with six possible new amendments to add to the state constitution, we've asked some of our top panelists to join us to discuss the political landscape. Our guests are Democratic analyst Gail Andrews, the Tampa Bay Times political editor Steve Contorno, former state senator Paula Dockery, Republican commentator Adam Goodman, the chair of the Florida Republican Party, Joe Gruters, USF's Dr. Susan McManus, Democratic State Representative Susan Valdez, and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Daniel Roof. They're all here on a special edition of Florida This Week. Welcome back. Well, this is it, our last program before the election. You may have noticed the presidential candidates and their surrogates have been crisscrossing the Tampa Bay area this week. That's testament to the importance of this area, the western half of the I-4 corridor, to winning Florida, the nation's largest swing state with its 29 electoral votes. We're going to talk about the presidential race and the down-ballot issues and candidates with an incredible group. Joining me now in this segment are Dr. Susan McManus, is a distinguished professor emerita of political science at USF in Tampa. Steve Contorno is the political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. Adam Goodman is the Edward R. Murrow Senior Fellow at Tufts University Fletcher School, a political consultant and a Republican. And Gail Andrews is a political analyst and media consultant and a Democrat. Great to have you all here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Let's start off, Adam, let me ask you, in a minute, make the case for me that President Trump is going to win on Tuesday in Florida.
Both history and present say that he will. The history that, you know, all the elections that Republicans have carried in the state of Florida over the course of the last 50 years, but the here and now. So Democrats, as we speak, are up about 630,000 in vote by mail. Republicans are up decidedly about 450 to 475 in terms of early voting. So the margin between the two parties right now, as we speak, is down to about 180,000. All models in Florida that we look at, we the Republicans, and not for spin, to know what we're really, where we really are, suggest that if we go into Election Day with anything less than a 300,000 voter deficit in any kind of normal time, we will prevail. That number could be as little as 100,000 or less going into Election Day next Tuesday, which can't be anything but good news for the president.
Gail Andrews, same question to you. In a minute, make the case for me that Joe Biden is going to win Florida on Tuesday.
Okay. It's fairly easy, actually, because of the diversity of the Biden constituency and voters and the enthusiasm and the fear of another 4 years of Donald Trump. So you have elders, you have minority people of color. Everyone talks a lot about the Latin slash Hispanic vote, which is very, very important. But I think it's countered by everyone else, women. People are exhausted. And I really do think that our turnout is going to be equal to, we're looking at it that way on Election Day, where the Republicans are going to obviously show up. But the divergence of the of our constituents and our voters is high. I know that people are standing in long lines. These are the kinds of trends that you see that are not based on they are actually based on historic numbers that we have. When people stand in line to vote, they don't care how long they stand. They want action. They want their voice heard. It's not good for Republicans. I just don't. I've been in a lot of campaigns and presidential campaigns, and I know when we're losing, and I know when we're winning, and I feel very good about this.
All right. So, Steve, fill in what they didn't tell us, what Adam and Gail didn't tell us just now. What else should we be considering?
Well, one of the big unknowns at this point is where are young people voting and are they voting? And we're seeing actually a pretty big surge in early voting among young people that's closer to what we saw in 2018 than what we saw in 2016. So that's definitely one thing to keep an eye on. It does seem that while Donald Trump has picked up a lot of support with Latino communities, especially with Cubans in South Florida, we saw another poll today that just showed the gap between Trump and Biden to be just huge with South Florida Cubans. Biden is also doing very well with older voters, especially along the I-4 corridor. We're seeing quite a few crossover voters in these polls of swing districts all along the Tampa and Orlando media markets. It's hard to know at this point if those are balancing each other out or if there's something tipping the scale. The early voting models, I think all the models you can probably just throw out at this point because it's such a weird turnout election at this point. We have so many people voting by mail, so many people voting early. Is that just people shifting how they vote, or are we going to also see unprecedented turnout on Tuesday as well?
Susan, what about women in the suburbs and what about seniors? The last time around across Florida, Donald Trump won seniors here in Florida by a pretty decisive margin. With those two groups, do you see any changes this time around?
The polls thus far, and let's be clear, they're iffy, a lot of them. They're within margin of error, so I really don't trust polls 100% at this point at all. The thesis is that the senior vote is going to more heavily go for Biden than it did previously. We don't know that because a lot of the coverage has focused on one place, villages, and looked at how many golf carts have been out there, Democrats versus Republicans. I will be surprised if there's as much bleed in the senior vote. There will be some, yes, but I'm not sure how much. Another big question, and Gail and Steve touched on it, that young vote is the most interesting and to me the most critical in terms of tipping, because 31% of our current registered voters are Gen Zers and millennials. And they're split, a lot of them, at least a third, are MPAs. There is a notion that their activism through parkland and climate change and so forth has made them more likely to translate issue activism, which up to this point has characterized them, over to voting. But we don't know about turnout. And I think another big question mark is MPAs, 25%, 26%, over a fourth of our voters are classified like that. I've seen one model that splits them evenly that says you should split them in two when you're making a forecast, and another that says two-thirds are Democrats. Two big unknowns, well, three actually, young voters, women, and NPAs.
And what about women in the suburbs? Can you give us any information about how suburban women think about this election?
We are definitely watching them, and it's hard to tell because they seem to be reflective a lot of the partisan leanings to begin with, but we know that they're often the swing vote. It's the suburban mom with children that typically swings from one to the other. They voted for Obama, then they voted for Trump. The question mark is, what are they going to do right now? We're looking at two things. How do they feel about their kids going back to school, either in person or online? It's a big issue among suburban women. And secondly, the economy, because it's suburban moms and suburban women that have taken a pretty big hit in terms of job or income loss during this downturn in this pandemic.
Adam, Susan said she doesn't trust pollsters. Is there a way to tell who is more likely to refuse a pollster's call, Democrats or Republicans?
Well, it's both empirical and intuitive. Republicans, especially Trump voters, in the culture we live in, we'll call it the cancel culture. That's the easiest way to shorthand it. Republicans, especially Trump voters, are least willing and most reticent to want to volunteer where they're coming from for fear of either being suffering another round of castigation with whoever's on the other side of the line, or just because it's in their innate nature. But can I go back to one thing that Gail said, which she implied that enthusiasm drives elections. I totally agree with Gail. But on that front, you see the President of the United States, who's all over the country doing 3 and 4 rallies a day, enjoying the heck out of it. And crowds are wild and enthusiastic, whereas the Democrats are having trouble, I think, engendering that. Maybe it's at the poll scale. Maybe it's the voters that have that. But the people on the street, they're not lining up down, you know, streets in Miami and Fort Lauderdale to see Joe Biden. They are lining up to see the president. I don't know if that's a defining.
I don't place a whole lot of value in crowds, the COVID madness. You know, the point is that is a big problem for the president. His numbers drop significantly every time he has one of these crazy rallies where people's lives are put in danger. And as you well know, COVID is an issue. It is an issue. This country cannot sustain another 4 years of Donald Trump. The enthusiasm is to remove Trump. If we're going to start comparing candidates, now that's another measure. People like Joe Biden. People do not like Donald Trump. Joe Biden has compassion for the American people. He wants to help them, and that is very apparent. Donald Trump, I don't know what that guy wants to do beyond keep himself out of prison and take care of himself. And he just lives for adoration. This is not an American president. This is a man who is obsessed with himself while we're dying. We are dying out here. And the enthusiasm is to get rid of Donald Trump. I'll take it any kind of way we can get it.
Let's talk about enthusiasm with Steve Contorno. Steve, the last few election cycles, the Democrats have had trouble with turnout in Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, and Broward County. This is the center, the powerhouse of their voters. If they get good turnout there, they're going to win. If turnout is low, relatively speaking, they're not going to win. What are you hearing from Democrats about how much enthusiasm there is in those three Southeast Florida counties?
Well, you see the polls show that, you know, people are generally voting against Trump more than they like Biden. And maybe in a normal year, that would spell trouble for Biden. But right now we're seeing such high turnout that it doesn't seem to be affecting too many people. However, I do know, I talked just this week to the chairwoman of the Hillsborough County Democratic Party, and she's already concerned about what the turnout looks like in South Florida. She recognizes that it was a problem in 2018, and she said they have to get their act together in 2020 and isn't sure that they're going to do it this cycle. It probably will be a few more cycles until they're back up to where they were during the Obama years. So that is a troubling sign, and it really shows you why they're spending so much time in the I-4 corridor. We had Obama in Orlando earlier last week. We have Biden here today. I think they realize they need to widen the gap in Orlando and Tampa just as much as they are trying to drive their voters down in South Florida. We'll know more after this weekend, after we have souls of the polls and things like that, whether turnout rightens itself. But right now, there are some concerns, I know, among Democrats about what it looks like in Miami.
Would you expect, Steve, that Souls to the Polls is going to increase the gap that Adam was talking about a moment ago, that more Democrats will show up Sunday to vote?
I mean, yes, you'll see a lot of Democrats show up. It's just unclear at this point as if they've already been targeted to vote by mail from Democrats, or if there's going to be a huge groundswell of people showing up. I just think we just don't know, because the numbers and the way that people are voting this year are just so far different than what they've been in the past, that it's hard to predict what Sunday's going to look out. They could widen the gap, or they could not have any of those people show up at all. It really, really depends.
Rob, if I may piggyback on what Steve's saying, the Souls to the Polls and that Sunday event is sort of a traditional event. One thing that I've always complained bitterly about on every campaign and on the conference calls and the Zoom calls and everything is, like, where are we? Are we getting all of our voters? And with people of color, a lot of times they're not going to show up to vote if they don't have a ride. I mean, this is one of the cultural things that a lot of people don't understand. It's really pretty old school too. But right, we're still placing ads for Souls to the Polls. That is our last stand, so to speak, beyond an actual ground game where you go in and you get voters the way we used to do back in the 90s, which by the way, the Republicans are always very smart and strategic, and they watch everything. And they were mimicking us because that's how they got to their micro-targeting. I was amazed and actually embarrassed because one year they asked, Gail, what are you guys doing with your GOTV? That's what real GOTV is, getting those so-called residue voters that are sort of left behind and don't even participate souls to the polls. That's all on election day. Now, I bet you the Republicans will be doing that. They will be getting their voters the way we used to go through neighborhoods with bullhorns and stuff. So souls to the polls is the last stand, pretty much, other than election day, where you do, I think we'll see a lot of Democrats showing up.
Susan, I want to ask you about low propensity voters. Is either party doing a better job of getting newer voters or people who have never participated in an election before to come out to vote this time?
Well, the way that you can tell that somewhat was the closing of the gap between Democrats and Republicans in registration. That's one example. The gap was closed to the point of, 134,000 different more Democrats than Republicans. That's one measure. But if you look at actually new registrants, a lot of them are young, and it's being done by social media. And we have sort of anecdotal evidence that the social media, the micro-targeting of new younger voters has been better by the Biden campaign than it has of the Trump campaign. I think that's kind of interesting because social media in some ways is a new thing, and it's the young people who are being targeted that way, but suddenly we've reached the end of the line for that with them. They are so over it, and they won't look at anything on their phones or whatever. It's been overdone. But in terms of new registrants, I think it's helped a lot with Democrats and young voters.
Adam, let me take a turn here. What impact do you think that conspiracy theories, QAnon, especially QAnon messages being spread among Latino voters in Southeast Florida, what impact do you think that that's having this election time?
I think a lot of this has become white noise. Remember, we've been drowned in a national conversation, particularly once Donald Trump, actually when he started to run for president, much less serve as president, for over 4 years. We've had a non-ending debate over whether this is the president's doing right or doing wrong or is noble or he's not. And all these things that are coming late and last minute on top of record media spending. We always say that every cycle, right? And so they're breaking records on television and digital. Of course they are. And they're going to continue to break records. I think it's become white noise. We live, Rob, in a center-right state. We live in a center-right country. Gallup says it's 72% is either moderate or conservative. We pretty much mirror that in Florida. If this were an ideological contest, it's no contest. Because it's a personality persona contest with COVID on top of it, it is a contest. But it's all said and done, all these things that come in last minute, late, I think people, even if they think they haven't made the final decision, who have not voted yet, pretty much are locked and loaded and are ready to move forward.
And Gail, do you think people down ballot who are, let's say, running as Republicans are hurt by some of the things said by President Trump at the top of the ticket? Or do you think that President Trump really reflects the base and there's no damage done to people at the bottom of the ticket?
Well, I think it's really a conundrum for them, especially in these U.S. Senate races. But even we were talking about earlier our U.S. House races here in Florida. I think that Pam Keith might have a shot at winning that seat. But back to the U.S. Senate, I think he's done so much damage to the senators. But, in my mind, it's all a wash. They were all complicit with all of these horrible things that he did. And I think the American people sort of feel that. But I think that people underestimate the voter. They pay attention. The worst thing that could happen to any political party is to be on the wrong side. And not even appear to be defending and looking out for the American people. And all of this information that voters are bombarded with, it just drives people crazy. And at this point, on the turn, what we call the turn, which is right now, There's nothing else we can do. I get calls all the time. Can you put, no, I can't. It's over. No, no more, no more, no more. We're killing people. But with all the information they get, they see all this stuff. They see it at some point. They saw all the Senate hearings. They saw everything. And it's gonna hurt them. I do believe we're going to take the U.S. Senate.
All right. So, Steve, let me get back to Florida for a second. Susan pointed out that about a quarter of all the people casting their ballots are going to be NPAs, independents, third-party people. It's sometimes said that as the election nears, they break one way or the other. You believe that. And what more do you think about, what more can you tell us about independents?
Not only do they probably break one way or the other kind of as a group, but they sort of do it across the country as well based off their demographics. So if there is a late break in, for say, Michigan, it's probably the same late break you're going to see in Wisconsin and Iowa and Pennsylvania. Florida is a little bit isolated from that just because the demographics of the state aren't so heavily reliant on like swing voters like that. It's there is a lot of very hardened opinions of the president one way or the other, probably more to his benefit than toward Joe Biden's. But we are seeing quite a few polls in like the districts along the I-4 corridor, especially where candidates are getting more support from independents. You know, there was a poll of the whole state that said 70% of voters who would consider themselves moderates consider the president untruthful and are tired of the way he talks and the way he conducts himself. And I think after 4 years of that, if Biden hasn't been able to capitalize on that at this point, then I don't know what you're going to do to convince them to your side.
Let me wind it up by asking, and starting with Dr. Susan McManus, one more race here in Florida, whether it's a race for Congress or county commission or state senate or state house or some other race in Florida, or an issue that's on the ballot, proposed constitutional amendments. What other issue are you looking at to kind of give us an indication about how the state feels about issues? Or is there an upset brewing anywhere that you would like to point out?
Well, the most interesting congressional race here is clearly the Franklin Cone race, and that's an open seat. There were only two open seats this whole cycle. And we're really watching that because the polls have been kind of close and the ads have been fast and furious, and it comes down to a journalist versus a military vet. We'll see.
Okay. Adam Goodman, same question to you. Another race that we should be paying attention to.
Amendment 3. That's the one about open primaries, which basically says everyone runs in the same primary, top two vote getters advance. If we move in this direction, it will fundamentally change politics in Florida, which already is the bellwether swing state, et cetera, extraordinaire. It will change things maybe irrevocably, and I'm not sure if that's good news or bad news for either party. It may be something that's better news for something called the MPAs.
All right. And both parties have come out against Amendment 3.
Yeah.
Gail Andrews, another race to watch or another issue to watch?
Well, I'm with Adam. That Amendment 3 is incredible. I thought, because I'm doing some work on that too, but my point is that these jungle primaries are bad because you throw everybody together and, you know, one party has a lot of influence on the other by electing extreme people on either end of the spectrum. And I think it will hurt us politically in turn. Why have parties? You know, just throw everybody in there and just, even though you might know who's who, it doesn't work. I think I would think that it would benefit the Republicans in particular, because after this election, when Joe Biden wins and we win the Senate, it's going to be reorganization time, and they're a dying party, you know. So that would seem to me benefit them too, quite a bit. And the NPAs will come out on top.
Gail, do you think that the raise of the minimum wage is going to pass just quickly?
Yes.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Steve Contorno, lastly to you, the other issue to watch, the other candidates race to watch.
I do think Amendment 2 is very fascinating because it's obviously going to get, I don't know if it's going to pass. I don't know if it's going to get over 60%. It'll be interesting to see. But it's definitely going to get a higher percentage of the vote than either the Republican or Democratic candidate for president. And yet, neither candidate really embraced it. You haven't seen the Democrats here locally get behind it or statewide. The head of the de facto head of the party, Nikki Fried, hasn't said whether she supports it or not, which just blows my mind. And so that's going to be interesting to watch. Also locally, Hillsborough County, Pat Kemp versus Sandy Merman, I'm really fascinated by. It's really going to tell us whether or not this county is solidly blue going forward, just because so much money's been in that race, and it's really two big names running against each other.
A huge amount of money spent in that one race.
Yeah.
Steve Contorno, Dr. Susan McManus, Gail Andrews, Adam Goodman, thank you so much for being on Florida This Week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, happy election day.
Oh, a lot of stress.
All right, so what are the issues that voters are most concerned about going into Tuesday's election? We asked some Tampa Bay residents, and they had this to say.
I think health care, because I think health care should be equal for everyone and not certain folks, because you think basic parts of life, like insurance, hospital visits, would cause expensive and everyone can afford it.
The healthcare issue, because of the obvious reasons that we're standing here with masks on. And, you know, my feeling is that Americans are what is important, not America. And the two gentlemen running have different sort of priorities about that.
Because, you know, we have a lot of people that sick, if we can afford healthcare. So that is the most important thing for me right now.
Probably number one, as in most people, as in most elections, is the economy. I think most people will realize, if they're honest, that prior to the whole pandemic, that the economy was going fantastic.
I think maybe global warming or something.
And why is that?
Because, you know, it's an issue that would affect the greatest amount of individuals and bring in the most amount of voters.
I believe that racism is a huge issue. And the fact that we have 545 children without parents due to Trump is absolutely ungodly.
I'm worried about taxes raising. I'm also concerned about Biden's mental health because he is just doesn't seem to know what he's talking about sometimes, and it concerns me. So that's my main concern.
I really think it's like confusion, you know, the difference between, you know what I'm saying, knowing the difference between patriotism and hatred, you know, so you can't let, you know what I'm saying, confusion and hate run the country. You know, we gotta, you know what I'm saying, America's all about one whole, you know what I'm saying, and everybody, all different genders, all different, you know what I'm saying, races coming together, that's what it's built on, you know, so it's just about everybody coming together and instead of division.
I mean, obviously, coronavirus, I think, and racial inequality.
And why is that?
I just think that there's a lot of problems, obviously, in our country right now with, you know, the protesting and, you know, people dying and all that. So I think that's probably what's in the forefront of everyone's minds because it's all we're seeing every day.
I think that the politicians could be working in a better way by being more accountable to the people and making them somehow realize that they need to be a little bit less self-serving. And I think one of the ways that we can do that is by setting term limits in both the Senate and the House.
Compromise, because I think there are people on both sides that are good people and want what's best for the country. So if we can, like, each side kind of give a little, hopefully we can, you know, move forward and not just fight all day.
We're supposed to be the greatest nation in the world. We're a joke to the world. And we got to get back on top. You know what I'm saying? We got to come together, white, black, Spanish, whatever, you know? And that's what we was built on.
To not be so divided and agree to certain things that work together instead of fighting each other and making it worse.
They seem kind of at each other's throats in the debates, and they're not getting any of their words across. They're just kind of combating each other. So they need to kind of come up with a better way to work these debates, because the past two have just been so ridiculous.
Joining us now for this segment are Daniel Ruth, a columnist and professor at the Judy Genschaft Honors College at the University of South Florida in Tampa. Susan Valdez is a state representative from District 62 and a Democrat. Paula Dockery is a columnist and a former state House and Senate member and currently does not identify with any political party. And Joe Gruters is the state senator from District 23 and chair of the Florida Republican Party. So great to have all of you here. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
So, Joe, I played that segment at the top, and I want to ask you about it because I think that, we in the media don't discuss enough about issues. But what issues do you think are really going to be prime as Florida voters decide these races on Tuesday?
Well, everybody knows that the president's delivered multiple times for the American people, ranging from the economy in terms of delivering the best economy this country's ever had, all the way through his leadership during this pandemic and, creating peace around the world. But really what this election comes down to, freedom and liberty and safety and security. People want to make sure that we don't, that we continue to have the personal liberties that we have, and we don't want to give up our safety and security back at home. You know, people see these, this looting and rioting across the country from these left-leaning cities, and they don't want that in their backyard. And, the support of law enforcement and his support of backing the blue, I think, is a big deal, and I think we'll carry today for the president
today. Susan Valdez, what issues do you think are driving Floridians to the polls this time around?
Well, thank you very much. I really do think that this election is a referendum on Trump in, every aspect, but beyond that, the pandemic is an overarching issue in this election. And as we heard earlier from constituents, you know, one of the biggest issues for them is healthcare, and the economy is another one. And you think about it, our office has spent numerous of hours helping constituents with their unemployment claims and things of that nature. So we have seen the actual impact of you know, these last 4 years under this administration, and where we have come to today.
Dan, what do you think about the issues? Did you agree with that, the speakers that we had at the top, or do you go in, Joe Gruter's direction?
I'm going to go in Joe Gruter's direction. Please, spare me. This election is not about freedom and liberty. It's about getting rid of the Trump criminal syndicate that's running this country, and to end the incompetence that we have seen for the past 4 years, and it is on display virtually every day. And I at the top of that list certainly is the president's abject bungling of the coronavirus pandemic. After 4 years, I just believe that the nation just wants to end once and for all the stupid.
All right, so Joe, let me get you back in on this. You want to answer Dan just for a second?
Yeah, think about what the president's done. We were supposed to lose over 2 million people, and we've lost just over 200,000. One person is too many, but listen, this is China's fault, and this president has unleashed all of our medical technologies.
Dan, hold on. Give Joe a chance to finish, and we'll get you back on, Dan. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no worries. Listen, this president has unleashed America's power in terms of getting these therapeutics and vaccines ready to go, where they're right around the corner. He shut down China when Biden did not. And the fact that he's talking about the Trump crime syndicate is absolutely Looney Tunesville. And we've seen what has come out over the last week with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, the corruption of the system of them taking advantage of these foreign countries while they're in power. This is about Donald Trump is working for the American people. He's lost $1 billion.
Dan, did Joe Biden make tens of millions of dollars in office?
No, he did not. Joe Biden, the idea is look at his tax returns, number one. You talk about the great sacrifice that Trump has made. First of all, we don't know that because we haven't seen his tax returns. And B, no one put a gun to his head to run for the presidency in the first place. He is an incompetent, narcissistic buffoon who is running the country. COVID, he is completely bungled the coronavirus crisis management, and we know that from the Woodward tapes. We know that from the Kushner tapes from just yesterday. So I mean, spare me all the Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity talking.
Paula, let me bring you into this. You're a former Republican. You no longer identify with a political party. Independents are really important this time because they make up somewhere between 22 and 25% of the Florida electorate. Give us your perspective on the important issues and also what you just heard Joe and Dan talk about.
Okay, so clearly the most important issues of this election at the presidential level are coronavirus, healthcare, and economy. And they're all bunched together. They all depend on each other. And this president has done a pathetic job of handling the coronavirus. And the talking point from Joe, with all due respect, about there's supposed to be 2 million deaths and we're lucky to have 220,000 is beyond ridiculous. That was a talking point that President Trump threw out so that anything that came in lower, he could declare victory. Are you kidding me? 225,000 Americans dead is a victory? That's ridiculous. Any other president would have handled this so much better. And now it appears that Trump is determined to spread the virus by showing up at all these rallies. Nobody's wearing a mask. They're cramming people in together. And I think that the vast majority of Americans are really wanting to go the route of a Joe Biden who's taking it seriously, listening to the doctors and the scientists, who is his slowing down on his campaigning to keep himself and more importantly, other Americans safe. So I think that independents are going to break for Joe Biden, and I don't know what they'll do down ballot, but I think that Joe Biden will probably end up in Florida with a plus 10 on independents, and I think that he'll do well in Florida, but Florida is Florida, and this election is going to be very, very close.
Susan, I want to go in a second, but let me ask Joe. Joe, you're just coming back from a Trump rally. That's why we're seeing you in the car. A lot of people there were not wearing masks. What do you think about what Paula just said?
It's outside, considered a peaceful protest. And Paula's also out to lunch. This president saved tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of lives, of American lives. And now we're about to turn the corner on this virus. He unleashed the American medical complex, smart people. We have all these companies working around the clock. Nobody was denied a ventilator. Nobody was denied a hospital bed. Joe Biden did not want to shut down. As a matter of fact, he called Trump a xenophobe for shutting down China. Paula's anger should be at China and the World Health Organization for misleading us. Donald Trump did a lot for Americans, and he's kept this economy going. This has not only been a health crisis, but it's an economic one. And what Joe Biden and the Democrats want to do is they want to shut everything down. We can't do that. We have to continue to live our lives. If Donald Trump could survive this, and Bobby Bowden, age 90 with diabetes, can survive this. Listen, we have to move out of this crisis. We're right around the corner from these vaccines, but the therapeutics obviously work. We got to get them in the hands of the people. President Trump wants to give everybody the same concoction that he got to any American that gets this virus totally for free.
All right, Susan Valdez, what are your constituents telling you about the president's handling of the coronavirus?
Well, they're really not happy with the way that he has handled the virus. In my district, in my voting district, my numbers have not gone down of COVID cases. On the contrary, they fluctuate up and down, but still within the same number and the same percentages. So I don't know what it is that with all due respect with my fellow senator over there, how he sees that the numbers, at least in my voting district, it's not happening. And part of that is because we do have the majority of the folks in my district are essential workers. And not only that, they also have intergenerational family members. So it's extremely important that we think about all populations, number one, and all Americans, number two, because they have different needs, different perspectives, and in my district, the numbers are still increasing.
All right, so what about the argument, though, that if you elect Joe Biden, the economy is going to be shut down for longer, and that you're going to and students are going to be kept out of school longer because Joe Biden may move to try to shut down the economy for a little bit to try to deal with COVID. So what about that argument that you're going to hurt the economy if you elect Joe Biden?
I believe that Vice President Joe Biden is going to listen to the experts and pay attention to what the experts are saying of how we need to control this virus best. And I don't believe that Vice President Joe Biden is going to shut down the economy and shut us all down. I think that he's going to take very serious precautionary measures to help protect folks. If you look at what's happening just this morning over in France and Germany, what's happening there? Everything is being shut down completely, with the exception of the essentials of kids going to school and things of that nature. So if you look at how the trajectory was when we first started having our first case of COVID, we were approximately 3 or 4 months behind these other nations, these other countries. So think about that. This pandemic is coming, the second, third wave is coming back, and we have to be prepared for that. If not, the onslaught of lives is going to be even more so. And I hate to say that, that would be on the president's back.
Dan, a lot of people feel like the country's at the breaking point. We're getting a taste of it as we do this interview, this segment. People are at each other's throats. How do we tone down the anger, or is the anger, you know, is the anger going to continue?
Look, I have three Trumper brothers, so you can imagine what that's like, you know, in my family. Yes, the rhetoric is very heated, and it is very intense. And the, one of the major factors that's fueling all that is a president who's not shy to use the dog whistle at every opportunity, and to undermine science, and to undermine experts, and to put Americans at each other's throats. I do believe that I don't know if he'll be successful, but I think the intent of Vice President Biden to try to unite the country, find some sort of common ground, instead of inflaming passions, instead of sucking up to QAnon and militia movements, and defending he can stop pardoning war criminals. That might not be such a bad idea too. You need a president that is much. Donald Trump has never lifted a finger to be a unifier in this country. He has spent the last 4 years solely appealing to Senator Gruters and other people in that base. He's never reached out once to try to bring the country together. And until we have a president that is at least willing to attempt that, we're in for the long haul.
Senator Gruters, does President Trump have the tools in his toolkit to bring the country together?
Yeah, he does. And he's able to do that based on the economy, based on the regulations that he's cut, based on the fair trade deals, pulling us out of these unnecessary wars across the world. He's created peace. He's been nominated 3 times for the Nobel Peace Prize. He has passed a criminal justice reform bill with bipartisan support. He has done more for the American people in 47 months than Joe Biden's done in 47 years. And he's going to continue to go to bat for the average, everyday American. If you think your voice hasn't been heard, and if you think politicians are all the same, then Donald Trump is your candidate, because he will deliver over and over again for the American people.
All right, Daniel Ruth, take it away. What would you say?
Well, first of all, being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize is a bunch of balderdash. You can always get, I can nominate you for the Nobel Peace Prize and crying out loud. But the fact of the matter is, this is a president who has sucked up to dictators. He's denied science. He has made a mockery of people in this country who are trying to do good by in the EPA and the CDC. He's ripped those agencies apart. He has a disdain for science. He has a disdain for people who know more than he does, and that's been the hallmark of this administration from the get-go. And he has done absolutely nothing to bring the country together. He's had 4 years to try to be a unifying voice, and he's rejected that and decided to become instead the dog whistler in chief. And that's where we are today.
Paula Dockery, let me try to turn it back to Florida. Isn't it amazing that on a discussion about Florida politics, we're arguing about President Trump? Paul, I want to ask you, seniors are important constituency this time around. And I'm wondering, with the with everything that's going on, including the COVID crisis, President Trump won seniors in 2016. can he win them again?
I'm going to get to your question about seniors in just a moment, but I want to address the question you asked about Joe Biden and the economy. And this is something that kind of rankles my feathers. The Republicans, my former party, throws things out there and then the media repeats them as though they're fact. Nowhere did Joe Biden, at no time did Joe Biden say he was going to shut down the economy. And what Joe Biden realizes that Donald Trump doesn't is that we can't get on a steady pace towards a strong economy until we handle the pandemic. So Joe Biden has said he's going to follow the scientists, he's going to follow the doctors. That does not mean shutting down the government. That does not mean shutting down the economy. That does not mean shutting down businesses or schools. It means to employ those recommendations made by the scientific and medical community. So first of all, let's dispense with the nonsense that's being put out there that Trump is for a strong economy and Joe Biden is not. Let's also address the fact that Donald Trump inherited a very strong economy from 8 years of Biden and Barack Obama, and that he has ruined that economy by bungling the pandemic response. So let's deal in some facts instead of throwing out talking points. Now, as to the seniors, you're right. The seniors are a very, very important voting bloc in the state of Florida. And there's a lot of evidence that seniors are starting to, the poll numbers are showing that seniors are starting to abandon Donald Trump. So I think that Joe Biden is going to do very well with the senior vote here in the state of Florida. Yes, they care about the pandemic. Yes, they care about health care. Yes, they care about the economy. But I think they didn't like being talked about as though they were dispensable and that some people had to die, as both Trump, other people in his administration, and even Senator Gruders alluded to today about 220,000 being a success.
All right. Joe, go ahead. What about seniors and President Trump?
One person dying is too much. Your anger should be at China, not at Donald Trump. Donald Trump unleashed American ingenuity, and now we're at the brink of having therapeutics and actual real the medications to treat this and the vaccines to try to eradicate it. I think you're in la-la land when you're talking about the Biden and Obama administration creating this economy. That's created because Trump has focused on the American worker, and Trump has reduced regulations and helped our overall economy by passing that tax cut, which gave more dollars and more American dollars.
Are you referring to the billionaire tax cut?
It's not a billionaire tax cut. I will tell you, as a practicing tax CPA, the average family got almost $2,000. You guys are living in la-la land. Joe Biden, all you got to do is look at the Democrat states and their leadership and what they're doing. This crisis is twofold. It's health and economic. We can't let the cure defeat, we can't have the cure be worse than the actual disease. We're going to get past this because of American ingenuity and Donald Trump's leadership.
Susan Valdez.
Thank you, Rob. You know, people care more about the pre-existing conditions than they do of Hunter Biden to begin with, okay? And it's very difficult for the average worker to get worked up about another potential scandal as such when we have 250,000 Americans dead over a pandemic, over this virus. And this president has shown very to little, no interest on tackling it. So in order, we're talking about the economy as well. And in order for you to bring back the economy, guess what we need to do? We have to control this virus. We have to control this virus in order for this economy to come back. And we already know that Donald Trump is going to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to leave office with less jobs than he came into. So, and it's all because of this pandemic and the way that he has not treated this pandemic and paid attention to its effect. So you know, all of these talking points and there's real and reality. And the reality is that people in District 62 and across the state of Florida are hurting. And what are we going to do as leaders to be able to alleviate and help some of the most vulnerable citizens that we have, our seniors, our children, and of course, our families that are working to try and keep a roof over their head and put food on their table. I have never seen so much need in our country. When every other Saturday, you go to the food pantries and you see miles of cars waiting to get a little bit of food and relief for their families. My friends, I don't know about you, but that's not the America that I was born into.
Daniel, for the last 8 months or so, the president has been saying the coronavirus is going to pass. I think it's fair to say that he's been hopeful for 8 months that we're on the verge of finding a solution. Are you as optimistic as Joe is that we're just around the corner from a solution to coronavirus?
Talk about La La Land. I mean, this is the same moron that has spent the past 7 months telling us that it was going to disappear as if it was a miracle, or take bleach, or it's all going to end by November 4th. It was all going to end by Easter. It was all going to end by this or that date. It was all going to be about the time that he actually releases his own health plan, which is never. So he has been leading the American people around by the nose for the past 7 months, passing off disinformation, lies, and outright falsehoods, lying to the 20,000 lies he's already told for the past 4 years. This guy has no clue, has never had a grasp of the severity of this crisis, and he has proved to be absolutely incapable of dealing with it, even when he has had at his right hand the leading epidemiologist in the United States, and Anthony Fauci. He's completely blown him off. And to take his advice from Scott Atlas, a doctor with zero credibility, zero expertise in viruses. And that's the guy that Donald Trump is sucking up to for information about this disease. Is anybody really surprised? Is anybody really, really surprised? I doubt it.
Joe, is the president overpromising?
No, listen, you got to give the American people hope and optimism. And what we don't know about the disease, listen, we've learned a lot over the last 8 months about the disease. And certainly for all these guys to be talking about job losses under the president and blaming the president is mind-boggling, because obviously it doesn't matter who the president was during the pandemic. Look at before the pandemic and look at the record-breaking economy this president delivered. And he delivered to everybody. Everybody had more money in their pockets. And once we get out of this, which we will, this president has already proven that he could take this economy to new heights, and he will do it once again. He'll return these manufacturing jobs with the focus of the American worker. If you care about real wages, if you care about being a good provider for your children, if you're not some type of academic elitist or some other elitist that doesn't have to worry about real wages and making money and putting food on your table, then Donald Trump is your candidate for you, because he's going to...
Joe, you just dropped off. Paula Dockery, there are countries around the world that have shut down and dealt with COVID and then are springing back, South Korea being one of them. Could we have taken a different tact than we did over the last 7 or 8 months and end up like South Korea?
Many countries around the world have done a better job than the United States has. And I don't know that we needed to shut down, but when you have the president of the United States, who has the bully pulpit that he does, showing up without masks, cramming people in, he's sending a message. When he calls Dr. Fauci an idiot, that is just so dangerous. It's not what they can claim they have done when they're giving you false information. It's what he's telling, the message he's telling to the American people about how serious it is to socially distance, how serious it is to wear a mask. They've worked in other countries. They would have worked here if the president of the United States had not sabotaged those efforts. So could we have taken...
I'm sorry to say
don't wear a mask.
And thank you. I want to thank Paula Dockery, Daniel Ruth, Joe Gruters, and Susan Valdez. Thank you. I wish our connections were better. I hope we can do this in the studio, and I hope the country gets through it. Thank you for coming on Florida this week.
Thank you.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night. And my guests were Joe Gruters, Gail Andrews, Steve Contorno, Adam Goodman, Paula Dockery, Susan McManus, Susan Valdez, and Daniel Ruth. If you want to comment about the program that you just heard, you can call us up on our comment line. It's 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. I'll play your comments back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. Because coming up next, we're going to hear the Midpoint Program with Sean Cannan. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for listening. This is WMNF in Tampa.